This is a News Laundry podcast, and you're listening to News Laundry Conversations. Welcome to another election show. I'm here in Bangalore with my colleague Pooja Prasanna from the News Minute. By the time you watch this show, Bangalore would have already voted. So we're not going to focus too much on Bangalore. And in fact, the point of our show is to really zoom out a little bit, talk about Karnataka, but also talk about the South, talk about some of the key issues that we're seeing being talked about this election. We have a very nice, exciting panel with us, and I'm really happy that all of you are here. Thank you so much for making out the time. Saugata, who's been on News Laundry before, journalist, author, you've written the biography of H.D. Devegowda, who's currently very friendly with the Prime Minister. And also you've written a book on Rahul Gandhi. Maya, I'm sure you all recognize her. You've been with NDTV for about 26 years.
26 years, yes.
And which was your first election as a journalist?
1989.
Wow.
Yeah, 1989.
So we're going to try and get some interesting election stories out of you. Maya is a journalist and currently you're freelancing. And we have Surabhi with us, the only spokesperson in this show. She's with the BJP, spokesperson in Karnataka. And Surabhi, usually when you're invited for television debates, you have to defend the party line. Today, you don't have to defend it, because you don't have another spokesperson who's going to ask you to defend it. But what we really are looking to get from you is insights into the party. What is the thinking? What are the key ways in which it's trying to get voters to... Yeah, what's the narrative? Pooja, you're our eyes and ears in the South. So I'm just going to quickly come to you first. 132 seats. Mm-hmm. We have Karnataka and northern part of Karnataka. Andhra and Telangana left. Tamil Nadu has already voted. Kerala has already voted. And the buzz always in this election, it's almost become a cliche, this north-south divide, that the big resistance for BJP is going to come from the south. What's your assessment of what's happening here? There's a lot of chatter about vote share, increase in vote share, possible upsets also. Give us a little overview and then we'll go to our guests.
Yeah. So there are multiple components to this north-south divide, right? There's this political, there is a cultural thing and whole fiscal difference as well. But I want to talk about the fact that people think that Congress has a stronghold in the South, BJP doesn't.
Yeah.
Quickly, 2019, BJP won 29 seats from the South. Of course, 25 of those came from one state, Karnataka, and 4 from Telangana. But Congress won a total of 28 seats. Mm. Yes, the Congress has formed more number of governments. Yes, the Congress probably has more grassroots presence in several states. But I think it would be stupid to write BJP off in the South and say that there's no presence of the BJP, because their vote share is growing in every state, be it in assembly elections or Lok Sabha election. And they're visible. I traveled to Tamil Nadu. You were in Kerala. I've traveled across in Karnataka. They're very, very visible in all five states, probably not so much in Andhra just yet. Mm. So you cannot say that, this BJP Mukt South.
Okay. It's normal. Great. So I think we can start with Surabhi.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about your southern strategy for the BJP. Of course, you can talk a little bit about Karnataka also, but what are the key things that you're looking at here in terms of getting voters on your side? This is again... When you look at the north, of course, it's considered to be easy, but it's still quite a battle here. So tell us a little bit about your key strategies here and key things that you're looking at.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on this show on a lovely Bengaluru evening. So I don't think that the BJP's strategy for the south is necessarily different from the way the party approaches elections elsewhere. This is coming from somebody who's been in the party for 3.5 months. But what I do see happening is that there's a lot of decentralized decision making in terms of how the election campaign should be run. Mm. So the flow of sort of information has always been in the in our party, from booth karyakartas to your page pramukhs to all the way up.
That's
the
bottom up.
Absolutely. The first round of election sort of strategizing is getting all of the voices from the ground to be heard within the party system. And once that is done, then the decision making on what needs to be done specific to each Lok Sabha constituency takes place. I don't believe that process per se, that structure and process per se, is different across the country. In terms of narrative and in terms of approach to what type of decisions should be made or what type of what is the electoral pitch per se. Because this is a national election, I think that that focus on the Prime Minister as well as his government and the report card of 10 years is consistently the message. So that has been the big one. But I think to add to what Pooja mentioned on the differences that we see from North-South, I personally believe, and I know that my party also speaks of this, is that every region, whether it is in the Northeast or in the within the Hindi belt as well, have their unique, distinct cultural as well as political character. Mm-hmm. And I think that political character also is much more diverse than probably even the cultural or the linguistic character of our country. That political character can sometimes be different within a household itself. So that political understanding that the party has is that there are certain issues that we hope to put forth, and we hope to find people who align with those issues, whether it is in the south, north, northeast, in the west, elsewhere. So the push has always been on the 10 years of the Prime Minister, and how that's communicated, that varies according to region, but the message remains the same, and the strategic processes of the party continue to remain the same.
A, everyone's saying it's a boring election, that there's no hawa, there's no buzz, all journalists are complaining. Yeah. What do you think, is this really such a boring election? And when we talk about the South, what are the big narrative themes? There's the Prime Minister's image, of course, but then what beyond that?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to sort of branding this election as a boring election, I think so, because I mean, for the first time after 1995, I've not been on the field. So I really don't know what, say, a Pooja is picking up or the party spokesperson is picking up. But then, you know, I mean, the kind of narratives, there is a kind of straitjacketing of narratives that has happened over the last 10 years. But when it comes to the South, there is a bit of variation in the narrative. It's not just Jai Shri Ram and Ram Temple and Modi and all that. There is a kind of nuance that has been introduced. And I feel that nuance has been introduced more by a certain Congressy liberal kind of folks, you know, I mean, trying to manufacture that difference between the North and the South.
You're saying Congressy liberal folks within the BJP?
No. They are trying to generate that difference between the North and the South. They're trying to distinguish between the North and the South, trying to say the North is different, the South is.
It's a deliberate kind of.
I think it's a deliberate kind of a narrative, which has been pushed for the last few months. At least 6 months now, trying to say that the North is not thinks separately and the BJP has no entry to the South. So this, they're trying to build a kind of, I mean, quote unquote, iron wall between two parts of the country, which I don't think is correct, because I don't look at what speeches are made, but I look at cultural narratives that are getting propped up. And I have looked at Modi pretty seriously, and I've written about this also. And I'm no fan of Modi or the BJP, so but I have to give it to him that his wooing of Tamil Nadu has been relentless. And in fact, on one other occasion, I did say that before Tamil Nadu went to polls, he had visited the state 30 times from the time he became Prime Minister. That is from 2014 till now, 2024. 10 years, 30 visits, the most for any other state. He has dressed differently other than his usual dress code. The only other variation that you've seen in Modi is the Tamil style of wearing dhoti or mundu.
Although
or
he does
whatever.
Dress accordingly in different parts of the
state. Especially
the headgear.
But if you look at, I can give you, examples, and it's kind of not the data that usually journalists look at during elections, but this is a different kind of data collection. This is kind of research.
Also, he's quoted Tamil poetry abroad.
Yeah, so
manifesto it's there. Yeah. Thiruvalluvar. Yeah.
No, but besides that, what is the more important thing is not the cosmetic things. The more important thing is what is it that was being said, that BJP is a party which is one nation, one language, one religion kind of party.
Yeah.
But there is a departure from 2019 on in the narratives that the BJP has created in Tamil Nadu. First, about the God. See, they made a kind of exception to bring in Murugan. There was a whale yatra. I don't know if any journalist remembers. There was a whale yatra. Whale is Murugan. Murugan is a subaltern plebeian god. And every second name in Tamil Nadu, or the third name, is Murugan.
There's also a very famous idli dosa joint.
Murugan idli kadai or something, right?
Yeah.
Am I right? Yeah. So I'm trying to say that there is an accommodation happening. And then, consistently after that, forget the Tamil Kashi Sangamam, where he's trying to build this bridge of antiquity between Tamil Nadu and Kashi, Kanyakumari and Kashi, and all that is more obvious. But the other thing that he has subtly done is, he has started equating Tamil with Sanskrit. In the sense, he's not trying to say that Hindi is supreme, so we'll impose Hindi. See, if you remember, Tamil Nadu is full of, it's a state that was built on linguistic identity. Right? It's very, very precious for them. At least that is the Dravidian propaganda that was done from, say, 1920s on. And then it became a little fiercer in the 40s. And then by 65, 66, they were in a position to form a government, and which the Congress has never been able to dislodge. And who were they building all that narrative against? It was against Nehruvian India, against Gandhi's, Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi's Congress. So all those narratives were being built again. So for the first time, you see a certain departure where there is a certain kind of classical positioning of Tamil that is happening. And so he goes to the UN, United Nations, and he quotes from the Tamil scriptures. The Chinese president comes to India. He accompanies him to, takes him straight to Mahabalipuram. And Mahabalipuram is a very interesting site. See, I mean, I think there is greater symbolism in what they do. And I feel that their approach towards the South has been more cultural since 2019.
And if the vote share increases, then we know it would have happened.
Why
some,
it has happened, yes.
Fruit.
So, and also, I mean, even when it comes to real politics, the kind of organization that they have tried to build in the last 3 years, ever since Annamalai has come. See, earlier also, there used to be OBC characters in the BJP there. But the instructions used to come from a certain kind of RSS, thing. But now it is actually bottoms up. Whatever she was trying to say, it's coming up, bottoms up kind of changes.
So he has more autonomy than any other state president
Absolutely.
In Tamil Nadu has had, including El Murugan, who was his predecessor.
Yeah, so the kind of change that you have seen culturally happen and the approach change. So it is very, very incorrect to say that, they are approaching South India like they have done in North India.
So there is a state-specific strategy. There's a
and one counterfact, which I'll end with that, so that, we started with this North-South thing. See, Congress, they say it's the bastion of the Congress and all that. I don't believe it's correct, because the Congress's vote share has declined consistently after the 89 elections. There was a small spurt when Krishna became CM, and this time there's a small spurt. But that is not a kind of solid holding on. And I believe Congress is effectively, after 130 or 132 seats that Pooja mentioned, Congress is effectively contesting 70 seats. Right? Because discount 25 seats of Andhra, I don't think they have a great presence. Just minus 25. Then in Tamil Nadu, they are contesting only 9. Rahul Gandhi has given up his party's national identity to embrace the Stalin and Dravidian identity completely, where he's borrowed everything, rationalism, federalism, kind of cultural autonomy,
socialism.
All those Union of India, the whole big speech that he made in Parliament in 22 of February, and then saying that I love Tamil Nadu. And, there was an interesting thing. Stalin issued a press release thanking Rahul Gandhi for praising Tamil Nadu so much.
Two things. One is the India Alliance. How much of a traction do you see that when you're talking to people, people who haven't warmed up to BJP or anti-BJP? Is the Alliance a sort of a coherent force in the South? Because we were in Kerala, there was a sort of a bitter Congress versus left battle. But by and large, are people attracted towards this Alliance or what it has to offer? And I think maybe all of you could also respond to this. Ram Mandir is a huge thing in the North, right? We have flags that have gone up. There's been a whole thing leading up to the event at Ram Mandir, and then even after elections. How big a factor is it in Karnataka or South?
Well, of course, we did have the sculpture from a Mysorean sculpture.
But
yeah, that was a big deal for them. But I don't really believe that the Ram Mandir is such an issue here in the south of India. I must say that decades ago, where my mother was teaching, the school where she was teaching, people came around collecting 5 rupees from people in order to build that Ram temple. Mm. But I still do not think that that is a factor which will really have a major impact on the south of India. I don't think so. Maybe the sort of we might disagree there, but I don't think it'll have that impact. The north-south divide, I think just as it's in the interest of the BJP to say, you know, we're going to get the numbers, you've got 400. It's a kind of, so while it may lead BJP voters to be complacent, it may also lead India Alliance voters to think, why bother? So in that same way, I think it's still in the interest of the Congress and the other parties to say, we're the South, we do it differently here.
Hmm.
To feel that the BJP doesn't have a chance. And when it comes to alliances, the India Alliance, I really do think that people here are not thinking about the TMC or thinking about even in Kerala. I don't think they're thinking that much. But I think the alliance between the JDS and the BJP will work in favor of the Congress. Okay. Because the JDS and the Congress were pretty much competing for the same area, especially in the southern part of the state. Mm. And now that the BJP has come in alliance with the JDS, I think people are not really thrilled with that. I mean, I remember Devegowda when...
Yeah, like just one year ago, the voters were so... I mean, it was very clear JDS voter was very anti-BJP. And,
when Kumaraswamy went to the BJP earlier...
Were they really anti-BJP? I thought they were more anti-Congress than anti-BJP.
When Kumaraswamy went with the BJP in one of his famous alliances and then refused to step down for Yediyurappa, I went to Devegowda. Devegowda was ostensibly against this whole alliance.
Yeah.
And I asked him that, are you really against it? And he kind of looked down at me and said, are you seriously asking me that question? So I said, yes.
But your party worker on the ground, and I'm sure you'd agree, your party worker hates a Congress party worker more than he'd hate a BJP.
The competition is more. The competition
for decades, for generations. Yeah.
Right? It's a traditional rivalry.
Exactly.
But since they've tied up with the BJP this time, I think it'll work in favor of the Congress.
There's another element there, which is very important. And which is, I mean, I think they complement each other. JDS and BJP complement each other because the Congress and the JDS were competing for this for a similar kind of space.
Hmm.
And BJP did not have a presence in South. So this opens up that space a little more.
And even in
they had already infiltrated Guspetia, you know, whatever they use, that BJP had infiltrated in 23, taking away 3% of JDS's vote share.
And urban
Congress
areas.
Had taken 4%.
Urban areas as well. Urban you areas see the were JDS in the urban area.
Yeah.
It's nowhere in Bangalore.
So, another thing is, between 1962, when Devegowda won his election in Holenarsipur as an independent candidate, expelled by the Congress, Nijlingappa Congress, 62 to 96, when he was Prime Minister, when he became Prime Minister, his entire life, 30, 35 years of his life was anti-Congressism.
He voted to anti-Congress. Yeah.
When Indira Gandhi sent one of the former chief ministers of Uttar Pradesh, Kamalapati Tripathi, to Devegowda after the fiasco here with Devrajaras, and she said, Gowda, you come over, I'll make you chief minister. And you don't worry about anything else, I'll make you. She sent Biri Jatti also. This is there in my book. And you know what he said, madam, I can come to you, but my oats will not come to you. You will get only one oat, that is Devegowda's oat. So I want to be fair with you. So I cannot bring the anti-Congress oat along with me.
So it's kind of returned back.
But one last quick point before we move away from the BJP-JDS alliance. So I was in Mandya and I covered that entire Hanuma Dwaja where, you know, there was a small communal incident that became a state issue. What I saw was if it was just the BJP taking this to Mandya, it wouldn't have gotten the kind of traction it did. There is a grassroots presence of JDS in the area. And Kumaraswamy, when he wore a saffron scarf, he kind of signaled to his party workers that we're working together to this an extent. And then that grassroots amplified the Hindutva message in Mandya. I don't know if we can go back from there, but I think that in itself shows how the two can work together. The messaging of BJP, the grassroots presence of JDS as a combination will be quite deadly, I think, for Congress to counter. There is no North-South divide perhaps politically as much. But if you look at the numbers purely, I'll give you two quick examples. 22-23 railway budget, the Northern Railways got 13,000 change crores. The Southern Railways got just 59 crores. This is something that both the Congress, DMK, they're all talking about this. And it's staggering, right, the difference. Second example is about how much each of the southern state gets in return for every rupee that they send in tax, which is not the case in Uttar Pradesh, Bihar, Jharkhand. Now, you may cite the example of Maharashtra, which gets less. But Maharashtra's share in terms of pure percentage has been increasing, whereas the southern states, it's come down. Now, why is this happening and how do you take this criticism that Modi government is being partial against
punishing well-performing states?
I kind of love this question that it's become from a policy question to a political question. One, because it opens up conversation. And this is something that we need to have a real conversation about. When the Finance Commission was set up with the idea to have these sort of redistribution equation and ensure that there is equitable distribution across, that linguistic boundary that was drawn was not some sort of a sacred boundary per se. It was a matter of convenience, right? It was not thought of as in Europe, for example, where there are those subcontinental sort of ideas and identities. That was not always the thinking that the people who constructed the country had. It was a matter of, yes, there is language pride and therefore there must be certain autonomy in order to promote that language and preserve cultural sort of inherent cultural traits. But as a nation, we were always a quasi-federal structure, which meant that unitary nature meant more than the federal nature did. So having said that, this same question on, why is it that well-performing states are getting the rap can also be termed from a state to a district to a person, right? That question that a lot of people who pay income tax very controversially constantly say is that why should I be supporting somebody who probably isn't, very wrongly saying that they're not working hard enough. They might be born into different situations and circumstances. But fundamentally, from a philosophical principle perspective, that's what it comes down to, right? Why is it that state boundary matters? Why is that the district boundary matters? Why does the family boundary matter? Why does the individual boundary matter? So in terms of actual numbers, the fact that during the UPA period was where the significant increase in the state allocation, right after the UPA period, it was actually in the Prime Minister period, but there was a lot of concern that the state's share within the entire quota was much less, and that went from 29%, then 32% to what it is right now, 41, yes. 42 first, and then with J&K, it became 41%, right? So that, the inner workings of that, administrative revenue sharing was never a matter of let us figure out if the Tamilians need more or the Kannadigas need more or Karnataka needs more. It was a matter of what is the most convenient way for us to distribute, given that we have all of these, administrative ways in which we need to run the government, right? Now, this political narrative that has come through, which is, that is being in so many ways, not just in the North-South has not just happened with this, but also with language, with political behavior, with culture, with the dharma, all of that, I think has been in my head when I see it, when I take two steps back and see it. In some ways, to me, that sounds like the Congress party giving up on Northern India and saying that we will resign ourselves to this identity, and Rahul Gandhi going out and saying that North Indians aren't working hard enough or they're lazy signals a very strong, this is it for us.
Yes, the factual part is right. The concern is very real. But historically speaking, the old Mysore region, that is the erstwhile Royal Mysore, did not want to sort of join, did not want the north of Karnataka to be part of the state.
Yeah.
The reorganization debate was on cultural difference and also GDP difference. They said our We are a wealthy state.
Why should we take,
take Hyderabad, Karnataka districts and the fringe districts? Mm-hmm. And now Siddaramaiah is the chief minister, right? So Bangalore gets 62% of the revenue for the entire state. Now, if that 62%, if you apply the same logic that you're applying, that I give 1 rupee to the central whatever and I get back 45 paise, you can apply the same logic here and you can say, I mean, Old Mysore should get the majority share. So, Karges, Gulbarga should be starved, not be given anything. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I mean, we are the ones who are generating that resources. So, if you have made this constitutional arrangement that you're going to be a country, then I think it's a very facetious argument to make, one. Mm-hmm. And two, you're giving it to Uttar Pradesh, where you have Mrs. Gandhi's constituency. All your prime ministers came from there and their development record is dismal. So, are you being a national party? Are you also blaming the performance of your own national leaders there? Mm. So the Congress, I thought, by bringing up that argument, should have thought through these questions much more, thoroughly and not shoot themselves in the foot. So, as I think, I mean, I partially agree where she says that they had lost hope in getting anything in the north. Mm. And therefore, they tried to build this. This is exactly what I was trying to tell you, that manufactured north-south kind of a thing. It's much more than that.
Yeah. May I just, I'll complete my point on the, so absolutely with the manufactured north-south, I do think that, and fundamentally, you know, I get this question in the circles that I have studied and worked as to why you chose the BJP or why you chose to be part of this ecosystem. And I think for me, these distinctions really sort of set the trend. You can accuse the Bharatiya Janata Party also of, thinking of short-term political gains at times. And we are a political party, and therefore that is... political strategy is important. But the distinction here is that when you go with an idea, whether it is Tamil Nadu, what Sugata sir spoke about, how there is a deep understanding of that Dravidism is what drives the politics, and how do you sort of undo that is to remind people or to give a counter narrative to that, which is, you know, there is a Kamba Ramayana written, there is a Muruga who represents Subramanya, and that linkage is there. There is an Annamalai who's speaking not only about politics, but also speaking about the very Tamil identity and how to show that Tamil identity is not distinct from the larger dharmic identity as an Indian. So the same thing can be said about West Bengal too. We've been very persistent in West Bengal. We've been very persistent in Kerala as well. These are regions that have not been politically beneficial, whereas the larger BJP and Sangh Parivar has been very clear that the fight here is not just political. It is also about Kerala has had, some doyens in philosophical contribution to India. They have, that has been recognized every time that the Prime Minister has gone to Kerala. That linkage has been made in West Bengal too, similarly. That persistent effort continues to be there. So for me, when I see the Bharatiya Janata Party's, when they go with their strategy, the electoral political strategy, to me that is only the second layer to the ideological base and the ideological positioning and the ideological thinking that goes in. Whereas when I see the Congress Party, I see the electoral strategy go first and then the ideological understanding go second. So that... to me, that looks like, you know, opportunism. Whereas I'm not negating the fact that in terms of money that should come through to a certain part of this, a certain region. And let's also talk, like Sir spoke about, Bengaluru contributes a great deal. And there is this North-South Karnataka divide to a great extent. There is, especially Northern Karnataka folks, feel that the Bengaluru being the capital doesn't do enough for Northern Karnataka. Karge's hometown, Kalburgi, has one of the lowest per capita incomes happening within the state as well as out through the country as well. So I do feel that there is truth to the fact that some individuals, some groups, some people, some states contribute more and receive less. But the larger thinking on that, same as a person who pays income tax, is that, yeah, there are also circumstances and historical differences.
But where is that larger question when it comes to the reaction against the misquoted Manmohan Singh thing about redistribution to those who need it?
Exactly come to that. Let's come to the Manisha, second phase?
Just a small, I mean, small counterpoint. You know, I mean, it's culturally BJP has been very accommodative of Tamil Nadu. But I should point out, politically, they've been very, very vindictive. Look at the governor there. He has actually undone everything positive.
Very notorious.
Very notorious. And the Supreme Court had to instruct him to swear in cabinet minister, one. And two, when the floods happened in December of 2023, Nirmala Sitharaman comes to inspect. In fact, the larger anger that remains in the minds of the people in southern Tamil Nadu is that when they were asking for help, she was asking for accounts.
Now, the first phase, like I said, people were saying it's boring. Second phase, you have a lot of conversation around redistribution. The Congress promising a caste census, that's been one of their key promises. Rahul Gandhi also comes that we want to do an X-ray, we want to know how much, who has how much. And then a counter, you have the no less than the Prime Minister make a speech in Rajasthan, completely, now you may have an issue with the policy, but completely misrepresenting what the Congress manifesto says, lying about it, saying that they're out to grab your Mangal Sutra and being odious in that sense that you're, you know, talking about Muslims in a very direct way, you're fear-mongering. Does that kind of politics have takers in the South? I mean, when this whole controversy was happening, did you feel people be like, okay, even BJP supporters, was it like, not, don't do this here? Or that there's no currency for such rhetoric here?
Again, there is, of course, a danger that the people we speak to or the journalists we speak to are maybe that...
Yeah.
I mean, there was a sense of, what is that? That has gone too far. Mm-hmm. If the Prime Minister had not gone too far before, then this time, certainly, it is just too much, perhaps just a bit too much. It was a statement which has received flak, of course, nationally, internationally as well. And we know that Prime Minister Modi does care very much about his international image. And international media have been really against this, have been really critical of what is being said without any prevarication. Like, I mean, much of the media in India has not really taken that up for various reasons. But the international media has come down on that because it's not a statement which you would expect even from a, I'm not saying even, from an MP, an MLA, an MLC, let alone the Prime Minister of a country. And when, again, the cynical misquoting of what is essentially the argument that they're making when it comes to devolution of taxes, give it to the people who need it the most. That is precisely what I think Prime Minister Manmohan Singh was referencing when he said, like, they need it.
He says OBCs, SCs, women.
Priority should be given to those in need.
There is a certain universalism to what the Prime Minister speaks. I think that is the first thing that one has to admit before one builds a strategy against Modi, which is not being admitted. So you're trying to draw these, coming back to what we were speaking earlier, so you're drawing these artificial boundaries and saying North is different, South. It is not. Please understand,
you're in boundaries
within the age of internet, age of communication, age of migration, age of migration.
Some of the southern states.
Can you take a guess how many people in Bangalore are Kannadigas? How many districts in Karnataka are a monolingual district? You just mean these are cultural factors. There are only three districts which are exclusively Kannada. Every other is a trilingual or a bilingual district.
Of course, as a party spokesperson, you'll defend what the Prime Minister said, but you're also a young person. You've been with the party for 3 months. Now, you can attack a policy, and that's fine. You may find this idea harebrained of redistribution. But why bring in Muslims into this and make this whole thing about Muslims trying to snatch your Mangal Sutra? Especially because you're the Prime Minister. Now, elections may come and go, but you're the Prime Minister and you're representing everyone, even those who didn't vote for you. So how would you defend
and calling them log jo jinke bacche zyada hote hain, distasteful.
I'm glad you gave that caveat of introduction that I'm a party spokesperson, therefore I have to defend the party line. But I'm a young person. I'll add to that. I'm also somebody who studied abroad, has not been born into this ideology. I chose to be a part of this after reading and thinking.
Your friends must be telling you, why on earth are you with this party? Your friends from the other side, how can you be okay with this?
I've managed to bring a few of them along, so I think they're more wary about my ability to do that. But the point that I wanted to make was that I do believe that there are certain conversations that have become a lot more open in the last decade or so. And look, we can sit on other sides of the aisle and still have that conversation, which is that, and this is true for across the world, conversations on immigration, on the fact that there are illegal immigrants coming into different states, the fact that there are war in certain countries leading for that to happen, the fact that there are, you know, personal choice of whether to wear something or not wear something, especially on women's bodies. These are bigger, louder, more polarizing debates that have been happening in the last decade. In India, that debate had not found a political voice as strong as the one that we are seeing in the last 10 years. Now, that might be a terrible thing at the surface of it, but I do think that having that conversation is incredibly important. And whether the Prime Minister should have said something or should not have said something, I am too small in the party to comment on that. But I do believe that when that is said at that level, which is that one,
we must be thinking about
whether redistribution means taking from one and giving it to the other. I'll just give you a simple example. One of the controversies that's happening here in Karnataka is how Muslims have been included in the OBC reservation, right? We will not talk about this because it is politically difficult. But the point is that when reservation came through and Ambedkar wrote it, it was a matter of here is a community that is disadvantaged, not just economically, but also culturally and socially. We have forgotten that. The whole SCST reservation was built on that premise. And then the Mandal Commission happened, and then the OBC politics started. And today it's gotten to a point where every community is saying that we are backward and therefore give us this reservation or not. Right? So that conversation is important to be had, which is that our Muslim brothers and sisters are not growing economically as fast. Now, yes, one thing is to accommodate and say we need to do the things that require for them to come out, as ma'am said, that you know, special effort has to be given. But that question also needs to be asked. Why not? Why are they not growing?
So I guess conversations can happen, but does it have to be so ugly?
The quote of Manmohan Singh on especially Muslims was unnecessary, is my point. Was unnecessary. You could very well say, if you're going to acknowledge that especially Muslims, then tell me why Muslims are lagging behind. That opens up the conversation. Is that because of your personal laws? Is that because you do not want to reform your own religion to the modern standards? Is it because you are saying that, you know, women have to be a certain way in their religion? So when we talk about the scheduled castes and scheduled tribes, there is an understanding to some extent that the Jati Varna system has not been kind to them. And therefore, the cultural aspect, the social aspect of their economic depravity was always bucketed for. What is the case with Muslims? And if we open that can of worms, then that means that triple talaq was a necessary thing. Then Shah Bano case, going back to that, empowering Muslim women was a necessary thing. Then talking about personal laws and UCC is necessary.
I think you can have all these conversations, but see, Manmohan saying especially Muslim, one can say it's unnecessary, but Modi bringing in Muslims is even more unnecessary.
I think.
The thing is, you know, when let's shift this to take it out of the ideology question and look at it just as a question of political communication.
Hmm.
Now, when did you stop thinking that Modi would not do that?
Hmm.
Modi has always done that. When he was chief minister, he has always done that. When he was doing Havans and Homa for the new parliament, taking Sengol, again, a cultural symbol from Tamil Nadu. He was doing that. When he was doing the Prana Pratishtha with OBC leaders around him, not Brahmins, he was doing that. There is a signaling that has happened continuously in the last 10 years and earlier too. So, I mean, I would say that why is the Congress party not anticipating something like this and only reacting after it is done? And you know what, they're very good at, I write this in my book, my Rahul Gandhi book, which is, by the way, very empathetic, all the Congress people should read, is that, you know, I mean, they end up fact-checking. Politics is not about fact-checking. Did they say it or did they not? You're not setting the narrative. He's setting the narrative. Mm-hmm. That is about, you're not here in a, Delhi School of Economics seminar, right? You're not at the Columbia University debating between
you're
Nobel laureates. You're a political, it's a political battle, for heaven's sake.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't understand the political communication of the man who is known for his political communication, and then accordingly build your strategies, then you're going to be only fact-checking all your life.
Mm.
And look at this Muslim question that she rightly picked up. Now today I saw a fact-check, which I think your thing also has done. It was Devegowda who gave. But what was the line of the Congress party until last month? What was Veerappa Moily saying? He was saying, nay, Devegowda did not give it, I gave it. And now today Congress is pushing that line back and saying Devegowda gave it. How can you be with the BJP?
There is reservations to the Muslims in the OBC category.
Yes. Hmm. See, because you could not give religion-based reservation, he opened up the OBC thing and put them there. It was done under MP Prakash's cabinet subcommittee.
Hmm.
And now Congress until yesterday was denying him that claim. Okay. And today when they are cornered, they are saying, nahi, humne nahi diya, Devegowda ne diya. This is the kind of ridiculous fact-checking and, you know, I mean, database thing that a political party is ending up doing when they should actually be building narratives.
But I think if we can keep Congress aside for a minute, I think the larger point is, yes, their policies can be criticized, should be criticized in many cases. And that's what I was trying to ask Surabhi as well. The Prime Minister has every, of course, it's a political campaign. Of course, he lit out at his political opponents, right? But should the language be the way it is? He's the Prime Minister, he's a two-term Prime Minister. And could he have done the same thing without name-calling, targeting a community in that? Because he didn't just target the Congress in that. He also targeted a community. He used the terms, kisko denge, wo jinke bacche zyada hote. But the fact remains that the total fertility rate is falling, both for Muslims and Hindus. So could this be done in a better way, the criticism?
That's interesting, because when here in Karnataka, when the phase two was happening, the conversation was on this chombu. There was an ad that the Congress put out saying that what have you got from the Modi government, and that is a
empty vessel.
Empty vessel. And the BJP retorted saying that that vessel is actually the Akshay Patra.
Not allow you to say BJP did it. In the Chikballapur rally, it was Devegowda who said,
oh, okay,
this is not chombu, this is Akshay Patra. See, culturally, he turned it around.
Yesterday, BJP issued an ad calling it.
So why are you taking credit?
Well, now that we have an alliance partner, you don't know who whispers in his ear. It could be a BJP karyakarta as well.
Come on, nobody can whisper in Devegowda's ears.
Nobody can do that.
We do have a lot of these internal meetings where we are thinking about a lot of the Samanvaya Sabhis actually happen on narrative setting. And that's something that, anyway, that's a different matter of fact. But the conversation on the chombu, and I remember a lot of people asking them, what do you feel about this? And they're like, why are they speaking in that language? Like, why is that language being spoken about? But that chombu and Akshay Patra, the comparison really hit ground, right? I'm not saying that that is the that is what political communication is at right now, but that's kind of where it's at with your Twitter and your memes and everything else. And I don't believe that the Prime Minister was necessarily signaling out one community per se. It could,
but he was. He took the name of the community.
It was, there was also the reference to illegal immigrants. There was also the reference to people, you know, who, and that Mangal Sutra's grabbing thing. I think that is just a masterclass in political communication. I mean, I say this when I'm, you know, I talk about this when I'm talking about savings and during the COVID, how, you know, Indian women inherently save on their, through their jewelry. And that hits always better than if I could have said it in any economic terms. So to me, that was just a matter of, you know, taking your Mangal Sutra as like this cultural big thing that happens, right? So on your question, Pooja, could he have said it in a different way? I think he has said it in different ways.
But the funny thing is, Manisha,
response was also not bad. The next day she said, my mother has given this, my mother.
Yeah, but then what got amplified? Now Modi is saying all this thing about Muslims.
But whose fault is that? The media doesn't give space.
It's not our job to sort of worry about the faults.
That's true.
I mean, I'm fascinated by the narratives that get put out and who grabs what, right? Now Modi is saying all this Mangal Sutra and all that, which we are all very offended. Yes, you know, I mean, I and you would not speak that language, and we think that political decency should not allow that kind of a language. But then, when has that ever been the case in India or in the US or any European, Viktor Orban or Erdogan or Trump or wherever? So, okay, forget that bit. But my thing is that he's saying all that, Mangal Sutra, that, this, and suddenly Mr. Sam Pitroda arrives on the scene and says, starts speaking of a disconnected subject called inheritance tax. And, you know, what I'm saying is that gets, he did not connect it with the Mangal Sutra, but the BJP's machinery is so good that they fused the two and then threw the bomb at you again. So this is what I say is that the complete unpreparedness of the Congress party. You should anticipate and go 10 steps ahead, and you, he is a fierce rival. Let us admit, you're 55, 52 and he's 303 years.
Decency, political decency, I think, left the building a long time ago. That's
You've covered so many elections.
Yeah.
Sam Pitroda is BJP's Kamadenu. He keeps giving and giving each
giving
time.
Whenever needed. I mean,
hua to hua.
The BJP is known as masters of distraction, of diversion, of taking something away. And I remember you saying just a little bit back that the Congress comes in first with political strategy and then culture. No, I think the Congress's political strategy is nowhere compared to what the BJP could do. I think the BJP has a political strategy. And it's a very deliberate thing. It's a very deliberate thing. Like, is a person going to hear the note Manmohan Singh was misquoted, or even Priyanka saying, no, my mother, or even talking about Prime Minister Modi's wife and that kind of, if he was, you know, they're not going to hear that. They're going to hear, your Mangalsutra will be taken away and given to the Muslims. Mm. You know, and because there is no mainstream media, will not be giving any space to any kind of answer to that.
There was this class that I took while I was at university on public narrative, and the sort of the strategy to it is that first you say the story of self, and then the story of us, and then the story of now. I think the thing that's getting wrong in the Congress way of thinking and the way of that we have versus the way of thinking we have is that India and its Bharat and its sort of people have a long repressed insecurity that is suddenly finding some sort of voice. I don't know if everybody agrees with this, but this has been my sense of it, which is that sitting on top, and you come from an English education, you come from certain privileges. If you sit and tell me what needs to be done versus somebody who's come from the ground and his communication style, his right or wrong, there's a whole other difference there. And I, as a common Bharatiya, find okay with somebody who's come from here speaking those things versus somebody sitting on top coming from English privilege speaking something else. So I do believe that that fundamental connect to what it is to be Bharatiya is an important communication strategy that people, both in the media, observers, do not want to acknowledge and accept. And the Congress party and their observers. And the reason the Chombu has had some gain is because that's the truth. That's how they speak. That's how we speak.
The son of the soil narrative.
No, I mean, just to complement what Maya said, very important point, which is, see, when Priyanka says it, it just doesn't get picked up as much as the Modi's Mangalos.
Yeah.
It is very correct. But there is also a danger in what Priyanka said, which is that they are walking, she's again, by invoking her grandmother and her mother, is again walking into the dynastic privilege trap that Modi has already laid for you. So everything is about the family. My mother lost her Mangalsutra, whether she wore one or not. Or my grandmother contributed gold.
Hmm.
See, the moment you say that, I mean, I've actually counted the number of public speeches in my book where Rahul Gandhi sort of says speaks about his family and sort of becomes very emotional. And his only non-critical thing is about his family. He never sort of has ever questioned his father's policies or his grandmother's policies, although they've been prime ministers. So that is an emotional thing. Why that happens is a separate analysis.
His family was such big players.
No, that's right. But what I'm trying to say is, at this point, you're walking into a trap that has been so well laid. So they're all saying that.
But maybe that also does work at the ground level. In 1999, when I was covering that whole Sushma Swaraj and Sonia Gandhi battle in Ballari, when I went to the villages, and, you know, I was talking about who do you want? They said Indira Gandhi. This is 1999, 15 years after.
But this is Modi. Now Modi, it's 10 years, it's changed.
No, this is precisely it. The country has moved on. The country has gone away from the... We've seen 10... This is a generation that's seen 10 years of Manmohan Singh and Sonia Gandhi behind. This is a generation that's also very, very globalized.
For example, when Modi talks about... For him, he will talk about RSS. He'll talk about BJP, his predecessor, Vajpayee.
His ancestors.
So happens.
No.
It so happens.
Spoken very less of the RSS. That's a separate debate.
That's a separate conversation. But I saw an interview where he spoke about his mother. Modi spoke about how his mother she passed away. He said my mother passed away in a government hospital when I was the prime minister. So whatever is relevant to them at that time. I mean, if you're saying that they're taking the flak for the policies of their grandmother, because Rahul Gandhi is abusive.
No, it's not about flak. It's about
cross-referencing. Even now. Right.
It's about cross-referencing.
Sure.
It's not about taking flak for their policies.
No, wherever they feel it's appropriate, they can also draw...
No, they'll be directly attacking Nehru. Yeah. So they're not saying Rahul Gandhi ne ye banaya, Kashmir to Nehru ne de diya.
Nehru features in primetime movies every night.
So that is a separate thing. But the thing is, yeah, this today, Modi in a rally, this morning I was just listening to a rally, he says that Rahul Gandhi has been speaking of him in a very abrasive tone. Speaking of political decency, he said something
as opposed to the respect given to Rahul Gandhi.
No, that's just, so he invokes that. The moment he invokes that, there is a Thali thing happening. And he says, Kene dijiye, we've all got used to it. Hum to aap jaise kamdar hai, wo namdar hai. And namdars always abuse kamdars. So he's turned it around this morning. Yesterday's Rahul Gandhi speech, you should have seen the response in the crowd. And of course, they arrange it beautifully. It's panned and shown and all that. You understand it better. So my thing is that the problem with Manmohan Singh was he was a technocrat for 10 years. And prime ministers are always political. He was not there. And that was like what happened in the European Union, in the European context. So you had a technocratic government for 10 years and people became hungry for a strong man. And they voted in Modi. And Modi has not left you sort of high and dry. He has sort of fused a lot of things. Let's accept that. That's why the Chombo advertisement, always, even in advertisement, doing extremities automatically creates a comparison. So the moment you say it's an empty vessel, people will say, nahi, magar wo Mysore Highway to tha, magar ye to tha. So it's important not to go to the extremities even when you build a certain advertising line.
Political strategy, gyan we've given. Last word and then we have to move on to our last segment.
I don't doubt that Prime Minister Modi has definitely elevated the presence or the image of India internationally. And I'm sure that's something he really, really appreciates. He likes that too, meeting international leaders, being hugged, having that rock star reception at different cities. Which is why I was surprised that he actually went ahead with the statement about Muslims. Considering the flak that it has got in the international media, I'm surprised at that because he does, I think, want to cultivate the image of himself as an international statesperson. And he has done that. He has done that for sure. And India is definitely more spoken about and maybe given more credit or more power in the international forum.
That's how we think. But, US did not even give him a visa until he became Prime Minister.
But he became Prime Minister. But he became Prime Minister.
No, but they all know his history. I don't think there's a great leader.
And also, they'll point at 10 statements that Trump has said. So I think there's limits to how much we can look towards, foreign countries to kind of regulate what they're doing here.
Why should they? I mean, I think that, I don't know if the Prime Minister is sitting and thinking, our foreign policies, the perspective has changed. I don't believe we're playing to the international audience.
And you have a Jaishankar who's firefighting separately completely on all of these issues. He'll come out with his own videos. So, I think last thing that I want to ask you guys, it's 10 years of Modi. What are the anti-incumbency factors? Because look, we've had the CSDS poll which has said that unemployment and price rise are huge pain points for people. There's rural distress like never before. There was this promise of... even in terms of investments coming into India, that hasn't happened in the way that it would have. So, we've talked about Congress's strategy failing. That's more about political communication. But we also have had this government which has been in power for 10 years. What are the main pain points for BJP? What's not working for them? Apart from the narrative.
Can I look at this from the southern perspective, since that's what we're talking about? And if I could quickly break it down. In Andhra Pradesh, what's working against BJP is the fact that for 10 years that Modi has been here, and 10 years since the bifurcation of the state, the special category status that was promised by the previous government has not been given. Now, the Modi government has said that it wasn't promised by us, but it was promised by the government of India in the parliament of the country. So that is something that's working against them. So I think in each of the states, yes, there are these common themes, like you mentioned, unemployment, price rise. These are certain things. But they're more vague, right? They're more abstract. Yeah. Do you blame the state government? Do you blame, people at large? Who do you blame for that? But this is very specific. Similarly, in Karnataka, they're trying to drive up this we're not getting our dues. We haven't gotten the drought relief, which finally Nirmala Sitharaman agreed that the union government owes Karnataka government. In Tamil Nadu, I followed a few rallies. There, again, they're talking about the same thing, that you will not get your due if BJP comes. What have they done? AIIMS Madurai, right? They talk about one brick and they go around saying that you were promised AIIMS Madurai, you were not, Tutukudi floods, you were talking about 20. So I think it's very specific. Overarching, you can manage that using media. But when it is something closer to your house, that's when it hits you hard.
One is inflation. Unemployment is at a certain, I mean, point, which is not unmanaged kind of a thing, but then it is there. You know, I mean, it's a, somebody can explain it away in as a global thing or whatever. So, but it's there. And it's really a bothering, worrying thing. So unemployment, inflation, and what else? You know, I mean, I don't think this, I mean, maybe polarization or Ram temple, all those things are not a kind of worry for any section of the population. But these are economic issues are a problem. But then if you try to go to elections, you know, this is what I've seen in the last 20, 25 years. If you go only pitching on economic issues, then it becomes a little difficult to sort of get through to people. So probably the Congress should have used a bit of, there is no emotional
narrative.
So
what do you think is a big emotional issue working for, I mean, in terms temple, of emotions?
Ram temple. Ram temple?
Yes, even yes. There you feel
it's a universal, yeah, yeah, it's universal. You know, my driver who took me to the airport, the driver who took me to the airport. I mean, I just asked him, so what do you want to do? You know, I mean, after the elections are over and you get less busy. So he said, I'm saving money to go to the temple. See, I don't believe in anything. I'm an agnostic or atheist or whatever. But then I think it's important to recognize that this is become an emotive thing. It's a universal thing across India. There's no north-south divide in that. And as somebody pointed out, I think the idol which was made, the Ram Lalla, happened here in Mysore. And Mysore has, again, the old Mysore region, if somebody says, again, the BJP is in the north of Karnataka. The killers of Tipu Sultan was one of the big issues in the last years of who killed him. You know, it was two Okaliga. Manufactured
that didn't catch on, to be fair.
And they manufactured the whole thing. Yeah. There's no,
it's a story.
Yeah, it's a story. Yeah. So it didn't really work because if the village knew the lore, then they would have said yes. But nobody knew the lore.
That's because JDS didn't back it. If they were in alliance, I think that also could have caught on.
They could have provided the...
See, Deve Gowda or JDS, let us be very clear. DMK has been in the same position with the BJP earlier. They have had an alliance, national alliance. They've been in Vajpayee's cabinet. Yeah. AADMK has been in alliance, BJD has been in alliance, Mamata has been in alliance. See, parties have a certain kind of existence. They keep their thing going. Yesterday, I think when somebody, Barka was asking Deve Gowda on, what do you think about Modi saying Muslim or whatever? He so very cleverly skirted the issue and spoke about something else. So, I don't think it's an ideological alliance. It's a political alliance.
Convenience.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
All, you know, alliances
are, and then Siddaramaiah was anyway threatening to take away his 15 MLAs. So he said, okay, you take my 15, I'll go and join there. So it is.
Maya, pain points for the BJP. If you want to come on emotional issues, the big emotional issues you're seeing this election.
Pain points, definitely unemployment and connected in the way of economy. I know that the poor are getting poorer and the rich are getting richer. The allegations of crony capitalism. The two names which I
electoral
will not...
bonds, has that caught on, do you think?
I think that it's a little complicated in the sense it's a huge story. It's corruption, it's carrot and stick, it's an enormous story, but it may not filter down to somebody who wants a job. It may not filter down. There is that allegation of crony capitalism, definitely for sure, that people are benefiting from not just projects but whole policies. That is definitely there. Another very pain point is the polarization, which Sugata said it didn't really match. I think it matters hugely to the people who are at the receiving end of it. I think that is a real pain point. And thirdly, I think the perception, reality of the loss of democratic values. We may not be hearing about it much precisely because of the loss of democratic values. The loss of the freedom of speech or the loss of the courage in people to actually go out and say what they want. But I think that feeling is there in many people that the pain point for the BJP is that they are diminishing the democratic access of the citizen of India. I think that is really a painful point, which you can't hear because you can't hear it.
And I think, again, I'm referring to another survey. I think it was a Pew survey, which said that Indians like authoritarian figures, strongmen, but they don't like dictators. There's a difference.
A subtle line there.
There's a subtle line. So, 400 power can also be a very scary prospects for even people who support the BJP. That what are they going to do with this power? Is it going to get to their head? Are they going to do things that are going to be anti-people, changes with constitutions? I think that is a real fear. So, we've already crossed our time limit. Sugatha has to leave, so we'll let you go. You have another interview. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to be on News.
Thank you.
And News Minute.
And we're going to continue our debate.
Thank you.
Our discussion. Can't really call it a debate.
Yeah, we're so civil.
I'm so used to saying debate. So, pain points for the BJP, because even, like you said, like a lot of our narrative comes from bottom up. So, even your supporters would tell you that, okay, ye sab theek hai, but ye cheeze logon ko pasand nahi aa rahi hai. Ye cheeze, these are the issues that we are hearing about. You have to focus on unemployment. You have to focus on something around price rise.
Can I just add a quick question? Just is there anything you think the opposition has gotten right at all?
it's falling apart
everywhere. So I want to know what you think.
I do think that the opposition, when I speak about the opposition across India, I don't believe that they've let go of Rahul Gandhi as much. But I think in Karnataka they have. I think they're not finally realizing that he is not adding value. He's only, you know, diminishing any sort of returns. So maybe that's that they've got it right or not. But I think that puts them in a very difficult situation, right? Because letting go of Rahul Gandhi is like undoing of the Congress. Letting of the
He's somewhere there in the poster, but I think Siddaramaiah and D.K. Shivakumar are like taking the lead on
But
this
I mean,
one.
If that were a direct, if Siddaramaiah or D.K. Shivakumar were in direct competition to Rahul Gandhi, that would have been a different thing. For example, if Mallikarjun Kharge, the Congress did not announce Mallikarjun Kharge as the prime ministerial face, even though the alliance partners sometimes suggested it, right? Because that is in direct competition to him. So there's no threat over here. But so that's, I think, the one thing that came to my mind.
That Karnataka Congress is getting right, according to you.
Which is letting Rahul Gandhi be away or ensuring
True
Rahul Gandhi.
True of Telangana also. I think Revanth is taking the lead there. So.
But pain points.
Sure, absolutely. I think whenever any political party goes into an election, it's always who are your strong voters, who are your swing voters, who are your weak voters, right? So that kind of understanding happens in electoral strategy. That's something that you need to think about. So I do believe that the people who are already supporting of the BJP, which is about 52% of the entire population that voted last time, that there
was 36% nationally.
Sorry, 36%. I messed that up. 36% that voted something 52. I'm forgetting the number. I think maybe popularity of the prime minister or something like that. Preference.
Vote share finally was around 36%.
Right. I think the economic pain points that were mentioned, price rise, unemployment, I do believe that if they were, not to say that, you know, these are not pain points, but if they were really vocal pain points, 2014 election was built to a great extent on that, on the fact that there was policy paralysis, on the fact that there was high inflation, on the fact that everything was going south in terms of the economic aspects. I don't believe that that has found the voice that it has right now, because the people have also been through the last 5 years of a COVID regime. People have also been through seeing other economies sort of fumble and tumble. As much as we say that there is not much, you know, not everyday people don't think about other countries, I do think that Sri Lanka crashing the way it did, Pakistan where it is right now, the fact that India is sort of not having to do all of that, and the GDP is growing, the fact that we have lower inflation than the UPA years, the fact that we are at a you know, better point in economic terms than what a lot of people had predicted, right, for India to be. These are emotional, economic but emotional issues that are also playing to the flavor of the season, which is Indian pride and who we are in our place in the world. So I don't believe necessarily that, yes, it might hurt, but there are superseding issues
that people also value.
When you go to an average Modi supporter or anybody who's in that block of, you know, the Modi supporting block, the difference has been that he has delivered and the BJP has delivered. That Article 370 on Ram Mandir, on the things that you put in your manifesto, you have delivered. Mm. On the swing voters, right, what they are thinking and what, and for us, everybody is a swing voter. Even if you have not voted for us, we're always trying to make sure you're listening to us and having a conversation with us. And I think on that perspective, anything that the Congress says has a 70-year history. You're telling me about dictatorship coming from a political party that had Indira Gandhi, You're talking to me about freedom of press when the people lived through emergency. That's not something. On one aspect, it's this. The second thing, when you try to sell corruption or electoral bonds or not, the Prime Minister had many interviews where he's spoken about digitization has left a trail or not left a trail. So it's not as if, you know, somebody's throwing something and saying that there's a scam and then we walk away from it or we shy away, which was the UPA modus operandi, right? That was, sure, we can go back and forth on that. But I do feel like there is, that Congress has that baggage that they don't know how to undo. And then pointing fingers from a glass house is a unviable sort of situation.
I think a huge, like, I would like to go back to what Maya said, that a lot of this depends on how the media plays up these issues. Yeah. I think the media in the run-up to 2014, 2013-12 was very strong in its criticism of Manmohan Singh. Protesters, like, weren't being called Khalistanis or Pakistanis. They were played up. They were given time in studio.
And they were heroes.
They were heroes. Yeah. I mean, Arvind Kejriwal and Arnab have sat down together and, you know, done debates. So how, if the media also keeps going back to Indira Gandhi, then the narrative shifts. And I think that's a huge, you know.
But I Manisha, I just sorry to say this, but I do think that
because there are present issues right now of cases against journalists, of FIR files, there are two things, EID action.
And where is this not covered or said? I mean, I watch television because I have to, and, you know, I'm a spokesperson. And
no, it's covered, but it said jail them.
Local, like, it's channels, the other way. I do think that just as much we differentiate voters between, somebody who's, there is a whole diverse set of voters. There's a whole diversity of media. In Karnataka, media is not, there's a Congress government. In Tamil Nadu, it is necessary, almost a state media. It's DMK media to a great extent. So this mainstream, I think
questions?
We over, may
no.
I?
Yeah.
In Karnataka, not as much as Tamil Nadu, I have to say, or Kerala for that matter.
I would say there's diversity in opinion. In Karnataka, there are people who still read English newspaper and know that which paper speaks in which way. And there are people who read Kannada newspaper know which way. And particular anchors have their particular style. So I think this over understanding of English media as the mainstream media is probably not the right thing, one. And second, I do believe that there's a lot more opinion makers than mainstream media opinion makers. In your rural areas, the amount of people who watch YouTubers or
Who's like the main opposition face these days.
But memes and social media and what people are saying on ground. And I think what works the most in Karnataka, in my perspective and understanding, there are big anchors who have their opinions or not. People are very discerning. I think the playing out particular statements, we have strong people making strong statements all the time. That is the conversation. It is not the anchors who are setting the agenda.
Kannada media, I think, is definitely better than English media. Mm-hmm. They're not as subservient, 100%. But they're not as critical of BJP as media in Tamil Nadu and Kerala either. Mm-hmm. So in this, I would club Telugu states and Karnataka and then look at Tamil Nadu and Kerala differently. And of course, English media is one extreme. But yes, there are channels in Karnataka as well. And again, I don't want to take names, which are kind of soft. They're soft on BJP, irrespective of who's in power.
I think Hindi media is pretty much taken, co-opted.
But Kannada media is not as bad as English or Hindi media. One quick point I want to add. Yes, media is a big asset in large parts, if not in regional pockets. I think another asset for the BJP is the Congress. Mm-hmm. From this conversation today, let's take Congress away, right?
And we discuss Congress more than the people.
Exactly.
Say you're doing exactly
and you just,
what
and you just look at the performance of the last 10 years. It would be difficult for BJP to answer on pure merit of the question. But it's easier to say, but look at what Indira Gandhi did. But look at what Rajiv Gandhi did, right? Mm-hmm. And also what Congress says now. They come in there, the way they criticize also. So I think for them, the biggest asset is Rahul Gandhi and the Congress party.
I mean, if you have put the standard so low, I'm sorry to say this, right? But that's what brings people like me back from other countries to work in my country. Because I was tired. We're all tired of that same narrative. We're not, you know, that colonial narrative. This is a part for me of decolonizing ourselves, which is that standard we've set for where this country can be was so low. And if somebody is coming in and challenging that and saying that we could be better, I mean,
that's nationally, while that works, I think one reason why it's difficult for BJP to set narratives in the South as much as it is in other parts. Here, the pushback comes not just from Congress. Pushback comes from regional parties.
Very strong.
Where you can't say, what did your grandmother do? right? So when you have Pinrai Vijayan has his own set of issues, but it's the or DMK for that matter, or BRS or YSRCP there, or your now current ally TDP, pushback has come from all of these
and
players.
Which is, or even like you were saying, Congress Karnataka. So I think there are more 24/7 kind of political parties in opposition to the BJP, which perhaps you don't see in other
as
parts.
As much.
We're going to wrap this discussion up. It's already been more than an hour. Thank you so much for staying with us. Thank you so much for staying
absolute
with
pleasure.
Us and giving
it
us your insights. Stay tuned for more shows coming up on another election show. We are going to be in Patna. We're going to be in Uttar Pradesh, West Bengal. And Pooja, you're going to Telangana next week. So she's going to be bringing you some amazing interviews and reports from there. Please subscribe to News Laundry. Support our election fund. It's completely non-sponsored, ad-free. It's being done thanks to you guys supporting us. So check out newslaundry.com/election fund. Support us.
And while you're at it, also become a paid TNM subscriber.
Yes. And News Laundry subscriber. Or you can get a joint subscription.
Yes, you can do that too.
You don't have to choose one. You can become a joint subscriber now. Thanks guys for watching.
This election season, your right to choose puts you at the heart of it again.
We'd like to be your eyes and ears.
Choose the journalism and media that serves democracy and you.
Simply log on to newslaundry.com/2024 election fund and choose an amount of your choice for the reports of your choice.